Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined by Joe Masato on a random Tuesday after the Thunder and the rest of the league's All-Star weekend. The Thunder had two guys there, of course. You had Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in Rising Stars and the Skills Challenge, and Chris Paul in the actual game. And it was a really fun week. I might be biased because I was actually there, and that's the first time that I've actually been at an All-Star game. But overall, I think one of the best All-Star weekends in recent history.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. You had, you know, some of the best young players, obviously, in Rising Stars. You had at least from a local angle, a really cool three-point shootout. You had a great dunk contest with controversy, and the Elam ending. It was all perfect.
It was, yeah, no, the Elam ending went really well, and we'll definitely talk about that at some point. Of course, over the whole weekend, every event there, you know, at least basketball event, it always started with someone giving a speech or having a moment of tears, or however they wanted to do it, to honor both David Stern and Kobe Bryant and Gianna Bryant. So that really was a big theme over the whole weekend, and a lot of really nice tributes, and obviously a really tough year for the basketball community in terms of those losses, but they definitely took the weekend to make sure that they honored those people, and they renamed the All-Star MVP trophy after Kobe.
Yeah, that was cool, and just even watching at home, it seemed like the NBA handled all of that so well with the different performances and tribute videos, and then the way that they honored all of them, and so that was very cool to see.
Yeah, Jennifer Hudson's tribute was,
holy cow,
wow. And the place that we're seated is right behind, for most of the media, is right behind the screen, so I couldn't see her at all, but her voice was it's still, like, even without seeing her face and whatever emotion might be there, just her voice carried so much of that, and her range in both, you know, volume and oh gosh, I'm not a music person, key, pitch,
I can't help you here,
some of those things, those are music terms, but those were absolutely stunning. And that was, and then followed by Common did entire, like, his right before the introductions, because he did the introductions, he went through the history of Chicago basketball, and I saw from around the screen, they showed they did a close up on Dwayne Wade's face, and he looks like he was barely holding it together. So that was a neat moment as well. And yeah, Chicago got it done.
Common's introductions to me were, like, crazy. Just from a writing standpoint, yeah, like, I was like, wow, this is incredible.
There's some really tough rhymes in there.
Yeah.
He fudged some, but, like, hey, it worked.
It did work. Just from, like, I mean, you were there. First All-Star game. What was it like just from, like, I'm interested. So what can you tell us about, like, how many people are there covering it? What is it like just in the, you know, just from the process of it all?
Well, the most insane part is there's a ton of media there from all over the world. And you get a sense of that when you're in the media room, and, like, this room is massive and they still needed, like, seating elsewhere because we'd filled it up completely. But you really got the sense of how big of a thing this was at the media day on Saturday morning, which is absolutely insane. And honestly, like, very hard to get productive stuff out of, because they've, in the last few years, have changed it so that now it's a fan event too. So you have these like 10 little, I think they call them pods, set up in the middle of an arena with fans all in the stands and the media just fending for themselves on the floor. And they have up to 10 guys talking at a time. Cause they did the guys who are part of the 3-point contest and the skills competition and all that. Dunk contest. I guess I don't need to do an all that when there's just three of them. So they did those guys first, and then they had the All-Stars come out and they did Team Giannis and then Team LeBron. And if you're like me and vertically challenged, you have to very specifically pick out your spot, and because otherwise, if you're going to be in the front, in the middle of everyone, no one's going to be able to see you or hear you, and the guys are certainly not going to be able to take your questions. So I'd have to like strategically place myself on the side so I could get as close to the podium as possible and not have a bunch of dudes just like towering over me. But then on top of that, because it's a fan event, you have a couple of different things going on. A, you have like two MCs, I think it's two, talking on the mic, like over all these guys out towards the fans, and they're polling the fans, asking them which pod they want to hear. And so sometimes in the middle of an interview, the mic will go from just blaring on the speaker it towards the people who were surrounding that guy and be broadcast out to the whole arena. So that's a weird, distracting thing. It's so chaotic. And the way that they vote for like who they want to listen to is by cheering. And then they also have this like side thing going on where the hosts are like interviewing other people. And then whenever the crowd sees someone big like LeBron walk out, then they all go wild. And it's so hectic. It's so hard to get anyone to answer your question. And then, you know, like, if you're specifically there for the Thunder, like I was, you don't want to miss what Chris Paul is saying. But yeah, at the same time, Russell Westbrook is talking across the arena from where you are. And so it's wild and chaotic. And I don't know if there's probably a better way to do it, but it really gives you a sense of, A, how much the NBA has tried to really cater this to fans, because as far as I know, there is no other media day setting that is just open to the public. And B, shows you the huge, it's funny because like, if you look at actual TV ratings and stuff, like it pales in comparison to other like entertainment events like the Oscars and whatever, but it still has such a huge national draw, and you have all these reporters from other countries like asking, hey, I'm from Brazil, or hey, I'm from China, like can you give a message to your fans there? And that happens all the time in these massive scrums. Chris Paul was asked about the coronavirus, like things like that. And so It's
very qualified to speak on the matter.
Yeah, he had a really good answer. He apparently, oh no, I'm showing how little I know about Chinese geography. But the Wuhan, right, is the city where it started, and he said that he wrote that on his shoes the other night, and obviously is you know, concerned about the people there and the world.
That's
and
interesting.
This outbreak. So yeah.
I'm assuming there's a lot of media members around every player, especially the star players, but what was it like for Chris Paul?
It was pretty big. And I think he has so many different things going on and hasn't been there. And, you know, this was his first time since 2016. And so It was good, and it actually was one with a bunch of productive questions, because sometimes it's very frustrating when you're trying to get in a real question and people are asking, what'd you eat for dinner? Or if you were a dragon, what kind of dragon would – actually, I think it was dinosaur. What kind of dinosaur would you be?
That's the content people want, Maddie.
Yeah, I know. I'm just poo-pooing all over.
Quit asking serious stuff.
So dumb. I'm so sorry. But, yeah, there were some really great – questions in Chris Paul's scrum about the Olympics and about the coronavirus and different rule changes and stuff. Because he's the president of the players union, he can speak to a lot of these really big topics for the league and do it in both a very informed way, which a lot of the guys there could do, but also in a very influential way, because he has that position. He's able to inflict change, which is what he did for the Elam ending, as I have already teased. But it was really good. The other thing that struck me was I think we in Oklahoma City are all so excited about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and what the kind of player that we all expect him to grow up into. And it was fascinating seeing him in a real international setting and seeing how much he's still kind of unknown. You know, obviously known enough to be in the Rising Stars for 2 years and get the call up when Derrick Rose got injured to participate in the skills challenge, but there were not very many people around him for a lot of the weekend. I mean, you had early on, you had a bunch of Canadian media outlets there. And then obviously the Thunder people who covered the Thunder, AKA me and the Thunder staff. I think Fox was out here too, the local Fox station. He's still kind of like a best kept secret for Oklahoma City, which I think being in OKC and being in kind of a bubble here, I don't know, bubble's maybe not the right word, like an echo chamber here. In my head, he was a much bigger deal nationally than it seems like he is. So, I mean, it's a fun thing that the Thunder and Oklahoma City gets to watch him in those beginning stages, and we'll get, I'm sure, as he continues to get invited to participate in this. And, you know, eventually you'd expect especially if he continues on the trajectory that he is now, ending up in the All-Star game someday, it's a cool thing that we get to watch the beginning stages of that.
Well, you just answered a question I was about to ask, because Jenny Carlson asked me yesterday when we were shooting a video, like, what do I think the being at the All-Star events did for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's profile? And I really didn't know because I wasn't there. But that's interesting that it didn't seem to – that he's, you know, not a perceived star yet and doesn't have that attention. I wonder how much of that – I don't know. You've got some superstars without much personality. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard, most notable among them. But I wonder, I'm not saying Shai doesn't. He's just kind of a quiet, reserved guy. I just wonder if that's part of it, that even beyond the court, he's not really in the – he doesn't have like a – he's not on like commercials or doesn't have a ton of endorsements and like isn't in the public eye outside of basketball.
And you don't expect him to say anything controversial, exactly. So you're not going to hang out in the scrum to get that soundbite or whatever it may be.
Yeah,
I don't know. And it was, I mean, All-Star is an interesting thing because it is all about celebrating these individual feats of these guys. There's also so much stuff going on at the same time that I didn't realize. But there are all these, like, promotional – on the arena and stuff, like promotional, I guess, poster, but you know, taking up entire walls and stuff. And there were like six guys maybe on it, and all of them were All-Star starters, you know, there are 10 All-Star starters, so they had plenty to choose from. But then Russell Westbrook was also on all of them. And so it's like, it's this balance between looking at who did the best this year, but also seeing these guys who are, who have these massive fan bases and really get people excited about them. And even though Russ was a reserve this year, he's still definitely in that upper echelon of fame, essentially. So yeah, it's funny. And there are obviously so many celebrities around everywhere, but I just thought that was interesting. But, you know, and not to take anything away from what Russell is doing this year, he's been pulling the Rockets through some weird days and playing out of his mind in all these small ball lineups and stuff. But, you know, he still was voted in as a reserve, but gets that top billing for interest.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's kind of fascinating to see who still has the draw, even when you're not technically a starter. So that is cool. As far as the on-court stuff with Shea, how was he feeling? What was he saying after the Rising Stars and the Skills Challenge?
Yeah. Well, poor guy. Rising Stars was right. It was on Friday, and he had played the night before. And so I asked him, because everyone was dunking in Rising Stars, right? Like it was basically the version of the All-Star game that we've become used to seeing, like very little defense. I was joking with a woman who covers the Hawks, because saying like, yeah, like, you know, Trey's not known for his defense, but then even in that game it was really just like, okay, I'll stick my arm out. And that's what everyone was doing. That's not a knock on Trey. And so it just became this like three-point contest and dunk contest meshed into one. And then you had Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, who I asked, like, were you tempted to dunk? And he said, absolutely not. Because, you know, he's tired. Yeah. He played the night before, and he said maybe next week. But that was not the night. So he had a pretty quiet – he had the one, like, behind the back, between the legs thing. So, I mean, maybe that also goes into why he hasn't blown up, because in a day and age where everyone knows Zion and has known him since he started putting those YouTube, like blowing up on YouTube because of his crazy dunks, Shea doesn't play like that. He's not particularly fast. He's not, you know, if he wows you, it's going to be with these crazy finishes, but those aren't the type of highlights that are going to circulate.
Yeah. Those are like more impressive in actual games. Like when he does them, they don't look as cool when no one's trying to play defense.
Right. So he did the one behind the back between the legs, which was flashy. And that was really kind of his only flashy moment. He was doing his regular scoop shots and, you know, taking some threes, and yeah, it was a very metered performance compared to what was going on elsewhere on the court. But I mean, kind of very very Shea. And I realized part of he might have played a little differently if he hadn't played a real game the night before, but I feel like that's so much so I think I said on brand in the story that I wrote, like very on brand that his one flashy moment is gonna be his ball handling, and other than that, he's just gonna do what he does in regular games. And then the skills competition the next night, the passing really got him. He missed all of his passes, and then almost made up for it because, oh gosh, I'm blanking on who he was. Oh, Chris Middleton. He was facing Chris Middleton. Wow, this weekend has seemed long. and Middleton missed his first three, which gave Shea a chance to almost make it up, and he shot this long three from like halfway between the three-point line and half court, and it looked like it was about to go in, barely bounced out, and then Middleton made his second one. So it was not to be, it wasn't going to be a crazy last second finish. Chris said that he thought that was going in, and they shared him, he and Chris shared a quick moment, as in Middleton again, not Paul, a quick moment where he was laughing and they, you know, kind of brief embrace. And he said that Middleton said he thought it was going in too. So, but Shea was very, not adamant, but he brought up on his own, like, that he hopes that he gets invited back next year, because he's figured out, he thinks he's figured out the passing, that what he was doing was he was trying to rush it and try to, you know, get the pass off as quick as possible. But if he just takes a beat and makes that first pass, that's obviously going to shave off some of his time.
So Shea and skills challenge next year, and Hamidou Diallo in the dunk contest next year.
Oh my gosh, that would be fantastic. Yeah, Hami was throwing out
very confident in himself.
Very confident. And like, I guess technically we can't say that that tweet was about the dunk competition, but when you
I guess technically,
but he sent out a competition saying, or a tweet saying that it would be an easy dub in the middle of the dunk contest. So like, if that wasn't what he meant, he had very bad timing.
Yeah. What, obviously a controversial ending, but were you there like for the dunk contest?
Oh my gosh.
Or were you trying to get some rest while no Thunder players were participating?
So I had a question that I wanted to ask Beverly, and he was the only guy in the skills competition who went and changed. And so I was waiting there for him after that. And and he didn't come until partway through the three-point contest. So I didn't see any of the three-point contest live. And then I had to quickly, I watched it on TV in the media room and watched the finish with Buddy Hield making his last second shot. And so I had to quickly block those things, and so we're nearing that final round when I finally got to run back up to my seat in the arena, and that was a wild, wild dunk contest. It was so much fun. That final round through the overtime essentially was fantastic.
Yeah, like Aaron Gordon is single-handedly responsible for two of the most exciting dunk contests ever, with the Zach LaVine contest and then Derek Jones Jr. this year. And this one obviously had some controversy, but, you know, even with the controversy, it's not like Derek Jones Jr. wasn't deserving. I thought they were both fantastic.
Yeah, and I can't say I've never dunked. Surprise, surprise. So I can't definitively say whether jumping far or jumping high is harder with a dunk. But jumping over, it felt in the arena like everyone, after Gordon jumped over Taco Fall to do his last dunk, it felt like everyone knew that he had just won. Like, the players mobbed him on the floor because there was like a group of players kind of like hanging out in the corner, and they all went in and were cheering with him, and the crowd was, you know, going bananas like they'd never seen. I mean, because they'd never seen anything like that. And then the scores came up and everyone was just shocked.
Yeah. Some people are saying like, oh, well, he clipped him. It's like Taco Fall is 7'5". He still jumped over him. I don't care if it wasn't like cleanly over him. That's
right.
Just, come on. It goes back to like not dunking. Like, these are people who have never dunked at all saying, oh, he clipped a guy who's 7'5". Like, get out of here.
Right. And he had already finished the dunk before. It looks like before any contact was made, and Taco Fall kind of just ducked out of there.
Yeah, very smart move.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and like, dunking from the free throw line is also super hard, but he was like half a step inside the free throw line. So I don't think neither was perfect, at least that's how the judges felt. But
Do you know what dunk was perfect?
To break it down.
It was Chris Paul's alley-oop slam in the All-Star
game. Oh my gosh. Yes.
That was the most surprising thing. I did a double take. I cannot believe that was Chris Paul.
Especially because just a few minutes earlier, I wrote this all in my story, but it was fascinating to me because I was already like hyper aware of anything that Chris and Russ did together because, duh, that's obviously what I'm going to be writing thunder. About. Right. So the first, when Chris and Russ almost had Russ dunking, so they almost pulled off an alley-oop early in the game, like in that first quarter, and Russ missed the dunk, and they're, you know, kind of smiling about it, and I was like, oh, like, hopefully I won't have to just write around that, but like that was a nice moment. And then Russ tries to throw Chris an alley-oop, and Chris ends up throwing a second lob, and I think Devin Booker was the one who finished that off, and that was like the funniest thing I've ever seen. And so after that, I was like, oh yeah, there's no way, like, Chris clearly is not gonna dunk. And then he did, and then they did it again, and he did. And what he said post game was that the first one, I forget who he said, but someone got in his way, and he was like, I'm not like Russ, like, I can't just go get a ball, like, everything has to be perfect. So that's why he passed up the first one, but apparently the second one was perfect enough, and it was beautiful and shocking. And I looked back on Basketball Reference last time that he's done that in a regular season, that he's dunked in the regular season, according to Basketball Reference, was the 2015-16 season. And he also had a dunk in the playoffs that year. And then nothing until the 2019 playoffs, which I don't remember. And I felt like I would have met, but maybe it was just like, it wasn't impressive enough to be a highlight that circulated or whatever. So that was between 2016 and the All-Star game this year, the only time that he dunked in competition was one 2019 playoff game, and then he breaks it out in the All-Star game.
Yeah, incredible. And I think like ESPN Stats and Info or something like that tweeted that he's never been on the receiving end of an alley-oop like in a regular season game.
That's wild.
So, craziness.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, and also his All-Star career high. Like, he was really good. He was 7 of 11 from three.
He took so many threes. It was wild. I mean, obviously he's going to take threes in an All-Star game because it's an All-Star game. Like, you're not going to be taking a million mid-range jumpers, but he's just knocking them down.
Yeah.
It also was a thing where it was really fun watching him and Russ play together, and they play really well together. And, you know, maybe we'll see that in some international competition, but no NBA team would want to deal with both their contracts at their age, but that would be really fun.
Yeah, it was fun to see them just from a Thunder perspective on the court together, and especially that alley-oop. And I thought that Chris Paul had a decent case for MVP. I mean, Kawhi Leonard was the leading scorer and I think made one more three, but like, if Chris Paul would have made the game winner, I think he might have won MVP.
Or even just done a little bit more in the fourth.
Did he score in the
scored.
Fourth? Yeah, I don't think he did.
Yeah, so he went a little quiet after the first three, but he was also, you know, the only reserve on the floor, and man, the guys around him were so good.
Yeah, he played a lot.
But that brings us to the ending.
The Elam ending.
So well. I was walking. So I did that story on Nick Elam, which you guys should read if you haven't already. It was a lot of fun. But the NBA invited him in for the All-Star game. And so I met him in person beforehand. And then I just happened to post-game be walking back toward the mix zone, which is where they put most of the players for, they'll bring some into the podium, they'll put most in the mix zone for interviews. And so I was walking back there and I happened to walk past Nick Elam again, and he was just so clearly happy. And I was like, it went so well. Like, USA thrilled. And his takeaway was like, I think it has life. I think it's going to keep going, just because of how well it went. So he was beaming. I told him, I was like, the one downside is that I ended on a free throw. And he's like, I know, but it was fantastic. You had guys with Kyle Lowry taking charges. You had guys arguing calls. And for the last few years, you know, the reason that we have, instead of East versus West, you have the drafting and everything, is because the league has been trying to get people more invested in the game, more excited about the game, because it's just kind of, you know, and you can understand these guys, this weekend doesn't actually mean anything for their teams going forward. And so they're not going to try to do anything that might put them in jeopardy of getting hurt or anything like that. And so the defense isn't great in general, and it, you know, and the passion isn't there. And so that's kind of taken away the draw for the actual game. But like, man, that fourth quarter, there were several players, and even Nick Nurse, who coached Team Giannis, who said it felt like a playoff.
Mm-hmm. Nick Nurse was out there calling all kinds of timeouts. Like you said, Kyle Lowry drawing charges. I thought Chris Paul was going to get teed up. He was so hot about a certain call. So it was just very un-All-Star-like. And like,
yeah.
I kind of like, too, this ending, especially for an All-Star game, because when people complain about no defense, like, I totally get that. But it's kind of fun to see them do that, particularly in the first two quarters, a little bit in the third, although it got very competitive at the end of that third quarter. But you kind of got the best of both worlds. Like, you got the crazy dunks, the threes, typical All-Star stuff. And then you saw, like, this is what it looks like when these guys play an actual game against each other. And, like, it was a lot of fouls down the stretch, just like a real NBA game would be. And even down to the ending, like, Kyle Lowry sort of trying to push Anthony Davis out of the post and being physical down there, not wanting to give up an easy bucket to end the game. So I thought it was a hit. It seems like everyone said the same sort of thing, and hopefully we'll see it again.
Yeah, I think when we all – there are two things that were going against it when it was first announced. A – it's really hard to sum up in one sentence. And I've tried to do it in all these stories. And when I talked to both Nick Elam and people at TBT, it was like, as the basketball tournament who adopted the Elam ending in 2017 on just temporarily, and then they continued, then they're like, hey, this is working great, and they kept it. But what they said is, like, once you see it, it's very easy to understand. Natural. Like, it's not complicated at all. Like, but it's just so hard to put into words, because you have to talk about, like, adding. For those of you who don't
know. You
have
to talk about math.
The end, there's actually multiple ways to do it. The way that the NBA did it is for the entire fourth quarter, which TBT just does it for like the last 4 minutes, I think. For the entire fourth quarter for the All-Star game, the game clock goes off, and instead of playing a timed fourth quarter, you play the first two a target score. And in order to determine that target score, the NBA wanted to honor Kobe, and so you added 24 points to whatever the leading team's score was at the time. So they ended up playing to 157. Because Team Giannis was up, what,
133. And then they were up 133 to 124 after three quarters.
There it is. So you add 24 to 133, you get your target score, and that goes up, and so they're playing to 157. And the fact that in order to explain that, I just used like three or four sentences, that was, I think, what threw people off when it was first announced. And then on top of that, they played each quarter separately and the winner gave to charity and had the kids from the charities behind the basket, which we should also talk about. But even when I read it at first, I was like, this seems like a lot. but I think they were right. TBT and Elam were right that once you just see it, you're like, oh yeah, that's easy. That makes sense.
Yeah,
it's just hard to put it into words.
Yeah, we were in the office together when that first broke that they were going to do that, and we read it and we're like, what? This sounds terrible. And everybody was making right. fun of it. And it's like, oh, we love it. So
and it went great. Like, and the fact that it was so close, it worked out perfectly for if the NBA wants to bring it back, because I think everyone's on board. Andrew Yang tweeted out that he thought it was genius.
Yeah, getting a high endorsement there. So everyone likes it.
What do you think about having all the kids from the charities there? How did that come across on TV?
Well, it was very cool that. They were helping out those charities, and to have one charity behind one team and another behind another. But it made me a little uneasy, because I was like, man, I just feel so bad for these kids who are like losing, because it's like they don't deserve this. So it created, obviously it's an incentive for competition on the court, but it made the off-court competition, how like some people were tweeting, like some kids were like talking smack to the others, and I'm like, this is not good.
No, it's like, it's so cool to see how happy the kids are when they won, and like are getting a ton of money donated to the charity. But like, yeah, you can't have both. It's hard, because I love that they got to be there. Like, that's an incredible experience. And they helped out with media days and stuff and introductions for the guys at practice. And like, it's like, what an incredible experience. But also, as soon as every quarter was done, you got like that gut-wrenching feeling, like, oh my gosh, After School Matters is not getting any money.
Yeah, no one wants to see sad children on their television screen.
Well, and then the other part was the way that they formatted it was at the end of the third quarter, if at any point there was a tie, then that money,
it was carried over,
100,000,
right?
Was carried over to the next period. And so the third ended in a tie, and so it was carried over into the final, finals winners. You know, if you won the whole thing, then you got that extra money. But like, that meant that Team LeBron was giving a ton of money, and still $100,000 is a lot, but like compared to how much you knew that you could have had, like I thought that, you know, maybe the NBA will rethink that and be like, okay, if it's a tie, it's a tie, because that math isn't hard to do.
Yeah. Anything else about the game in particular? I have like a all-star question unrelated to the game.
No, I think that does it. Let's hear it.
Well, we blogged about it. So someone, I forgot how it got brought up, but like someone tweeted at David Holt, the mayor of Oklahoma City, about Oklahoma City's chances of hosting an all-star game. And he said that Trae Young was spot on, because Trae had said on Saturday that I think it's like there's like a need a couple more hotels. And David Holt said that the target number is 6,000. Most of those have to be walking distance to the arena. Most of them have to be 4-star hotels. And he said that Oklahoma City is not anywhere close. So I'm not asking you to envision an all-star experience in Oklahoma City, but I just wanted to address that like there's really no hope of that in anywhere near in the immediate future.
Yeah, no, and there were even, I mean, Chicago is a massive city, and there were even issues with like Ubers were a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're trying to go anywhere, like, it was so hard. I mean, they did a really good job at the game itself, trying, like, they funneled everyone into a lot, and like that was actually very well run for the number of Ubers and stuff that were coming in, at least at the times that I was leaving, which was, you know, later than other people, but didn't have issues there. But just like throughout the weekend, it was brutal. And if you imagine, you know, Chicago's a massive city and that's an issue there, like,
yeah,
imagine that in Oklahoma City, like, it's a lot. And then there are just so, like, so many celebrities and so many fans and people coming in from as fans and celebrities and even like players' families and stuff that are all coming in. And beyond hotels, just imagine that descending on Bricktown.
Yeah, it would be kind of a mess. Like, I can't even picture it without laughing. And that's not a knock on Oklahoma City. I'm from here.
No, I absolutely would love to imagine it. Yeah.
But there's three other current NBA markets that haven't hosted. Portland, which would be really fun.
I was kind of surprised that Portland was on there.
Sacramento and Memphis. I think I'm missing one, but I can't. Or no, that, yeah, those are the four. Portland, Sacramento, OKC, and Memphis.
Yeah. And Mayor Holt quote tweeted or included an article about the Sacramento one, and I remember I think I included a line from it in a story like months ago, or maybe last year, over the summer, I don't remember. Anyway, Sacramento's original bid, and Sacramento's like a decent sized city, probably comparable to Oklahoma City. Yeah. I'd have to, don't quote me on that. I haven't looked up the population numbers, but and they were still, part of their proposal was like, we will bring cruise ships into so that people can stay on the cruise ships like as hotels. And
just from a geography standpoint, I was very confused at that when I first read it, because I was like, Sacramento's not on the coast, but I saw this, they've got channels coming all the way from the ocean to the port of Sacramento, where they were going to have,
there you go,
going to have cruise ships. So I don't think there's any, I don't think there's any ports nearby that we can pull up a cruise ship, but,
there's no other.
Yeah. We'll just load up the canal with like floating rooms and stuff like that.
I like selfishly would love the All-Star Game to be here, because it would be amazing for a whole staff to get to cover it. Like, that would be fantastic. But there's a long way to go. And I think the key thing, because everyone's like, but we just built a new hotel. But you have to have a lot of really nice hotels too. Not that Oklahoma City doesn't have nice hotels, but if you are looking at just a pure number standpoint, you can't just look at all of the hotels in the city. It has to be, you have to be looking at 4 and 5 star hotels. And
you know, Mayor Holt included that, like, even with the Omni, his quote was not anywhere close. So like, just to give you an idea, like, yeah, the Omni is gonna add, I don't know how many rooms, but a lot, and it's gonna be walking distance to the arena and a nice hotel, but it would take seemingly like several more of those sort of projects.
Yeah, so hopefully one day.
One day.
Yeah. Should we talk a little bit about post-All-Star before we wrap up? That's been a
post-All-Star. Yeah, we can. I mean, we're going to have, you're going to still have great stories from more from the All-Star break coming up. And then on Friday, we're going to do a unofficial second half look ahead, only like 27 games left, I think, but just to see where the Thunder's schedule stacks up against other Western Conference playoff projected teams. But it starts with two home games, coming back Friday against the Nuggets, and then against the Spurs, who were just here not too long ago. So, you know, two pretty decent games. I mean, the Nuggets are obviously a very good team, but two pretty good games to start the second half.
Yeah, definitely not easing back into it.
Yeah.
But I think after how well the Thunder played in that insane January, you're not going to see anything like that in the second half in terms of just like how brutal that schedule was. Right. Not even just like opponent wise, but
yeah, 17 games in 30 days.
Yeah. Crazy.
There's nothing that grueling ahead. And like, I looked at ESPN has like a strength of schedule tracker, and the Thunder are 15th, so like right in the middle, which means, you know, which at least leads me to think that the back end of the schedule, it might not be super easy, but I don't think it's super tough. So if they've played around a league average schedule, it's probably going to be around that moving forward. So,
which is probably ideal for this team, because, you know, Billy Donovan, because they had a brutal schedule, like second half schedule last year, and Billy Donovan kept talking about how like, oh, well, you don't want essentially to just have a bunch of easy games in a row as you're moving into playoffs, because you want to be playing your best basketball at the end. Now, that didn't work out so great for the Thunder, who played their worst basketball after All-Star break, but some sort of balance between still getting good competition but not getting brutal competition is probably ideal.
Yeah. So I'm interested in sort of working on that and seeing how it all shakes loose. But like we've been saying, the Thunder is a lock, or as close to a possible lock as you could imagine to make the playoffs. It's just a seeding issue at this point, and seeing how high they can get, or you know, probably won't drop as far as the 8 seed because they're ahead of that pack, but the 7 would probably be on the back end of it. So it'll be really interesting to see where they compare to like teams like Dallas and Houston, especially the teams that are right in front of them.
Yeah, and we'll see. Crazy things have happened. Could happen.
Yeah, all I'm right. excited.
Well, thank you everybody for tuning into this Thunder Buddies podcast. We will see you on Friday after the Denver game.